Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 2nd of December, recording at 9:28 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick review of the week. Well, for the first time in, 4 weeks, it really favors the bulls in stock markets. And we had very strong gains earlier in the week. Some of those continued in Asia today, although not for China, which is still an underperformer. But interestingly, India showed another strong gain today, and we see some, we have evidence of a downside failure here, but it still needs to break the progression of lower rally highs to really indicate that a floor is in. It hasn't done that yet. Okay, but back to the review. European stock markets very strong on improving sentiment towards the euro. More on that in a few moments. And what else to highlight here? Wall Street, a terrific performance by the NASDAQ index. I mean, that's just really outstanding. And we've had such good relative performance there. But today we saw a little bit of profit taking in here, which paired gains, well, it eliminated gains. We had moderate gains for much of the day, but they faded as we moved towards the close. Elsewhere, long-dated government bond prices had taken a bit of a beating this week, but we saw a bit of a rally here today. In currencies, the dollar had given up quite a bit of its earlier gains this week until today, and the dollar is mostly a little firmer in here. Well, it's mainly against the euro and sterling today. Precious metals had a good week in here overall. Silver and gold, though, failing to hold, and platinum, failing to hold the early gains that they saw today. But we closed the week out with silver maybe still trading after hours at 17.44, nearly 45. That's virtually unchanged on the day. Silver had punched higher to 33.74 today, but it's closing out down 19 cents at 32.57. Palladium, interestingly, has been the stronger precious metal in the last few days. Now, that's up to 6.44. Elsewhere, crude oil, and that's a little firmer here today in terms of the WTI. That's one at 101, and I didn't check Brent. The Brent price is at 110. That's up also over a dollar overall. Grains and beans, we saw. So we saw rallies, and then a little bit of profit taking in here today, particularly for rough rice. And I think that's pretty much it. Okay. So what's going on here? What do we make of it all? Well, in terms of global stock markets, the technical action has improved, and I would argue that the fundamentals have improved. Now, let's take the latter first. A catalyst that I had said was missing in earlier months that did concern me, and a change that I really did want to see, was a partial reversal, at least a partial reversal, of the tightening monetary conditions that we had seen in the growth economies. Now, that has been taking place. It started first with Brazil, and Brazil has now had 3 interest rate cuts, and it's also removed the tax on foreign buying of Brazilian shares. A number of the other growth economies, particularly in Asia, have been lowering interest rates as well. Australia, also among the developed economies, has lowered interest rates. So we've seen an end to those inflation-fighting, more restrictive policies. China hasn't cut rates, but it has increased reserve requirements, and I suspect that it will do more. India, interestingly, after 13 consecutive interest rate hikes, India has not eased monetary policy. As a matter of fact, some people have been saying that India wouldn't do that all next year either. I think nobody knows. That's far too pessimistic a view, in my opinion. And India, it's interesting to see the way India has bounced in here this week. But as I pointed out before, it's got more to go. It's still in a medium-term downtrend and has to break those lower rally highs. Now, a number of markets, indeed most markets, are still in medium-term downward trends. But Owen and I have put great store in the importance of the placed great store in the importance of the September and October lows. And they're holding for the most part. I mean, there are exceptions, but they're very much among the very weakest stock markets. But the more important ones have been holding near those September-October lows. And most significantly in the United States, which has shown a relative outperformance, which is impressive. The Dow is actually up on the year, and what's been a very, right now, up 3.82, and what's been a very bad year for stock markets. So, as long as those September and October lows hold for the majority of stock markets, and particularly the USA, our view is that the secular bear market, that short, sharp bear market that we talked about, is over for most stock markets, and it's either ending or over for the others. Now, when I say ending or over, that means that we're getting ranging, because we're still in medium-term downtrends, but we are getting this ranging base development activity. That stands out very clearly on the charts, and this week's surge in stock market indices, which really commenced when we had that coordinated action by 5 central banks. Those were OECD central banks. But it also occurred, whether in unison with or by coincidence, with the liberalization in reserve requirements in China. And what that really suggested, I felt psychologically it was hugely important. It was a lifeline for Europe. But psychologically, again, it showed that the central banks were cooperating. And indeed, that is important. And it added to the monetary easing that I have been talking about. So, again, that was an extremely positive development here fundamentally. I cannot think of a more powerful tailwind for global stock markets than monetary easing. So that looks good, and the upward dynamics that we've seen this week look very good technically. And they, because what they've basically done is to reaffirm support from those October and September lows. And while we had a blitzing big rally in October, as you know, We're seeing some sharp sell-offs in for pretty well all markets in the though throughout most of November, right up until near the end of November, when suddenly this very strong rally took place. Now, that hasn't wiped out all of the declines that we saw during November, but nevertheless, it's been 5 good days in here, and it's recovered a big chunk of that. And as I mentioned, scoring upward dynamics in the process. So that looks good overall. And then we have the autonomies. That's my term for these big Western, largely multinational companies that are leveraged to the global economy. And I call them autonomies because these are quasi-autonomous firms that have really outgrown their home country markets. And they're very much, they're more like, I've described them as being akin to mobile principalities. And they don't have much land other than the office space that they own or rent, but they are very powerful. Some of them are richer than individual small countries, and they go where the money is, and they are able to run very efficient operations. First, they don't have to worry about unemployment. They're able to shed labor should they wish to, but they manufacture where they can do so most cheaply, and they sell where they can get the best product. So basically, as I say, they follow the money. And they show outstanding stock market performances. And what also happened recently is that while most stock market indices got walloped during the first 3.5 weeks of November, but not sufficiently to take out those September and October lows, except in a few instances, the autonomies, most of the autonomies, saw very little retracement of their October gains, and indeed some of them have just continued to push on upwards. And that's good technical evidence overall. And then to round out the technical picture, you've often heard Owen and me say that the NASDAQ index, or tech often leads. And the NASDAQ is chock-a-block with tech, as you know, and that's been a real relative star. So again, that's quite important. And then you've also heard us say on numerous occasions that the ASEAN stock markets, Indonesia, Philippines, Malaysia, Thailand, and so on, that they in over the last decade, they've been very much leaders on the way up, and they've been slow to get caught in the sell-offs, or they've held their relative strength until the latter stages of a sell-off, and then bounced back quite strongly. And they certainly bounced back very strongly in October, and didn't give up much of their gains in November. So that's an impressive technical sign. And then on another fundamental point, I think we're getting a very significant movement towards the type of stabilization and cooperation within Europe that is very much required. And that makes me more optimistic overall. So, again, this is still a difficult time for the global economy. Big recession in Europe. We can't assume that the problems are over by any means. We know they're going to take a long time to resolve, but I do feel that we're much closer to that grand bargain in Europe. And basically, the ECB new head has indicated that provided that governments do their part, then the ECB will also do its part. Read Philip Stevenson's excellent column from the FT. If you haven't already seen it, and I have posted it here today as my lead item, I won't elaborate on that because it just spells it all out very, very effectively. And this is all taking place at a time when sentiment was exceptionally bearish. There was a consensus that the euro would break up. Stevenson says that's not... sorry, it's Philip Stevens. I'm calling him Stevenson. Philip Stevens. But good columnist. And he's pointed out that, well, now it looks as if maybe the euro isn't going to break up. Taking our cue from our own instincts and some good feedback from German subscribers, we feel that there's still a strong commitment to keeping the euro together. And unless these people are whistling in the dark or lying, and I don't think they are, then they will do what they need to do, and so will the ECB. It's not going to write its own death warrant. Okay. Now, what about these long-dated government bonds? Well, it's going to be tricky because, the good news, though, is that I pointed out yesterday is that we saw sharp drops in the Spanish and Italian bond yields. On the charts, it looks like they have peaked, given the climactic activity that we have seen there recently. So, a bit of encouragement there. Now, we had all this flight to so-called safety in the long-dated treasuries and in UK gilts and in German bunds. Now, they've given up some ground this week, as I mentioned in my review. But investors who have retreated to that sector are going to take comfort from the ongoing purchasing coming from Bernanke at the Fed and also the Bank of England in terms of UK gilts as part of their quantitative easing programs. So that can keep yields low and prices high for a while longer. But what we're talking about really are yields that are below the prevailing rates of inflation. And that's not an investment situation, quite obviously. So again, when you've got 10-year UK gilts what are they yielding now? The yield's gone up a little bit, but say it's 2.25%. You know, we've got a 5.5% inflation figure on the last report. Now, Mervyn King of the Bank of England says that's going to go down quite soon, but he's been saying that for the last 3 years, and it hasn't. So we're in a stagflation environment here, which is going to keep monetary policy accommodative for a while longer, because there are unemployment problems in most of these countries, these governments are going to continue to err on the side of future inflation. So there will be a price to pay at a future date, and yields will eventually move higher. Long-dated yields, but that's not so much of a problem here today, except in those so-called peripheral European countries, and they may well be beyond, past the worst of their crisis. Okay, what about currencies here? You know, it was around the beginning of the year. First off of the year, there was a lot of talk that the U.S. dollar might collapse, and that's been with us for more than just the beginning of this year. And we don't see it. We don't see it on the charts. We haven't seen it on the charts all along. As a matter of fact, you study those charts and you can make a case for a dollar support building. Certainly, and we've already seen a short, decent short-term recovery in the dollar. And it shows scope for potentially some medium-term recovery as well. Now, it's sometimes described appropriately as the cleanest dirty shirt when compared to the euro and sterling. And I'll go along with that. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we saw some appreciation in the dollar against sterling and the euro. But I certainly don't think the euro is going to collapse. And again, if we get the grand bargain to keep the euro together with the ECB playing its part, the world's going to heave a huge sigh of relief, and they aren't going to go back out and then try to trash the euro. Certainly every government, and I think anybody with any common sense, is going to appreciate that a bit of stability, since they've decided that they want to keep the single currency. Whether you think that's right or wrong or not, or whether they should have ever had a euro to begin with, is not the point anymore. It's just that I don't think any of us have much to gain from a major blow-up of the euro, and hopefully that's going to be avoided, and that's our view, that it will be avoided. So let's get back to the dollar as the cleanest looking dirty shirt against the weak currencies. But I think as confidence improves in the global economy, and we're not there yet, but then we will see the growth economies' currencies appreciating. I wouldn't be at all surprised, for instance, if the Indian rupees slump is over against the U.S. dollar. And we've certainly seen the dollar come down and the growth economy currencies rally here this week. And although they'll be volatile from time to time, but on a long-term basis, I would back the currencies for the countries that are producing the very attractive GDP growth rates more often than not. What about commodities? Well, I think this is shaping up as a potentially quite bullish period for precious metals. Now, I mentioned palladium getting a decent rally in here this week. There's a bit more optimism about the U.S. car industry. And I think also China, now that China is backing away from its monetary tightening, that would help their automobile industry. And palladium is, of course, a major component in catalytic converters. Gold, though, is the one with the best chart pattern overall, and it's been a good relative performer generally. And it looks to us as if gold is very much in the latter stages of its support building process following the accelerated overheating that we saw back in August and the big pullback. The rest of the activity has been support building and above the rising 200-day moving average. So that's all very positive. Oh, incidentally, I just saw this today. Evidently, it had may have taken place a few days ago, but Bank of Korea, which has large reserves, they bought more gold this week. And I think we'll see more central banks with decent surpluses continuing to buy gold. It's also not beyond the bounds of possibilities that we'll get the IMF selling a little more gold. But overall, there are likely to be more banks that are interested in buying it than are interested in or that are forced to sell it. So, really, this additional monetary easing that I mentioned was good for stock markets. It's certainly good for gold as well. And while I've always said that I felt that it would be higher interest rates that would eventually kill off the secular bull market in gold, we're certainly not going to see anything like that in the West for a long time. And now the growth economies are easing monetary policy once again, so interest rates are coming down in those countries. And that's favorable for gold. So I wouldn't be surprised to see further gains this month and in the first quarter. Now, there are also some problems there. There are stories, we often see stories that the traditional wedding buyers in India, the people are there, people are purchasing less gold and actually turning some of it in for scrap. That's been going on in the United States and some other developed countries for quite a while now. But so gold remains essentially an investment story. And I think that again, it's steady performance overall in this crisis, despite getting ahead of itself back last August, is going to reassure and encourage people. And in terms of sentiment, I like what I see because back in August and in early September, subscribers, bless them, but why they were doing this, they were sending us some of these ludicrous articles about people forecasting that gold would go to or could go to $100,000, this kind of thing. This is not analysis. This is just wishful thinking, or this is just sending out some propaganda so that hopefully other people will buy gold to ensure that the profits of nervous over-leveraged traders are not unwound. I don't want to digress too much on that, but in recent weeks and months, we've seen far less in terms of bullish commentary on gold, and we've actually seen some quite cautious to outright pessimistic comments. Now, that market sentiment's always a contrary indicator. So I think that's a favorable background as well, and I want to be represented. So I have increased my gold longs this week. I've done it, did this in futures. I bought back into silver here today, a little bit early, and I have a bit of palladium, but gold's going to remain my main holding here overall. If it pulls back, I might add a little bit of palladium as well. So I think we're heading towards an interesting period for these precious metals. Now, a number of the industrial metals look well and truly oversold. Copper has been the first one to bounce. Remember, it got down to that $3 level, and it's now at 358. And nickel had a good move in here today, small upward dynamic. I think that the industrial metals are likely to, industrial commodities in generally are likely to firm as interest rates in the growth economies come down. That will cause people to be a little bit more optimistic about a pickup in GDP growth at some point. In 2012, and I would share the view that that is what will happen with this change in interest rate policies. So I think they could do all right. Now, the one I'm nervous about, perpetually nervous about, is crude oil, because the state of the global economy is fragile right now, as you obviously know as well. And the last thing the world would need is a spike in crude oil prices. Now, hopefully that won't happen. But if we had a major supply disruption, whether it's due to so-called Arab Spring type activities, I assume that Assad's going to be overthrown at some point or other, or he's going to flee at some point or other. The Libyan situation had pushed up oil prices when it was comparatively new news, but we're now in the fortunate position that Libyan production is gradually picking up. But, the U.S. is pulling out of Iraq, and that may destabilize the oil situation there. So it's uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable period. And I've said on a number of occasions that the last decade, so-called noughties, was a precarious one in terms of energy supply and demand, upward pressure on prices. Same's true this decade. And we really need to fast forward, maybe 10 years or so, to the time when the shale oil and gas is being produced much more widely, and hopefully there'll be more nuclear up and running as well, and more efficient renewables at the same time. I think that will all happen, but the holy grail of energy independence for countries like the United States, very much achievable with somewhat different politics, if that's what people would like to see. And I think that I maintain that energy prices in real terms, that means inflation adjusted, of course, will be lower 10 years from now than they are today, despite having stronger growth at that time. That'll be because of, let's say, all the renewables coming on stream and the shale oil and gas all around the world. But this is still a tricky period. So if anything goes wrong big time for the global economy, I think it would be a spike in the price of crude oil, then all other bets are off. That would prevent economic recovery, would throw us back into recession, and it might even prompt some countries to push interest rates up once again. Hopefully that's not going to happen. But right now, on this day, the 2nd of December, the picture is looking better for equities. And the picture is looking better in terms of the euro crisis that has had people terrified, understandably, for a number of weeks. And on that note, have a fabulous weekend.